So this is clinical problem solving. Who here reads the New England Journal regularly? Alrighty. So, well, you know, they have the case records of Massachusetts General Hospital, which are amazing cases, and I recommend you read this week's case. I just read it today. It was great. Great case this week. But about once a month, they have a case called clinical problem solving. And instead of just giving a case and then talking about the pathologic discussion, what they do is they actually take more of a medical mystery and people coming in, what year are you?
Sorry? Plus year.
Okay, you're sitting with your interns. What are you?
Sub.
Sub, okay, you're the first of our subs. Why don't you come around the table? Let's subs over. So once a week, once a month, they do one case where it's sort of a medical mystery. And instead of just giving you the whole case at once, they give the case bit by bit and have an expert clinician who doesn't know the case start thinking through the case, formulating a differential diagnosis until the very end, and they usually get it right, but it's to see if they get the diagnosis. But it's actually not really to see if they get the diagnosis. The purpose of this is how you think. And I do this in smaller groups with my teams when I'm on the wards. And I like to do it in the big conference also. So let me explain how this is going to go. This is a real case. This one was done in the New England Journal this year. It's a good case. We'll get into it in a second. Okay, so why I do this is... Sorry about this being weird, but the curtains, the screen is up so that we can write as we go along. But so the purpose of this is that how we think is as important as what we know. So you can be a walking textbook, and it doesn't matter if you can't put it in the, if you can't think about it properly, think about what's more important, what's less important. If you don't think of it, you won't diagnose it. So often you guys are admitting a patient and you're like, they had chest pain, well, out of my, move on. You're not necessarily sitting down and thinking about what the possibilities could be. So this is just an exercise in formulating a differential diagnosis. And it's going to be a huge differential diagnosis to start. And that brings us to the next point, which is that ruling out is as important as ruling in. So we talk about Bayesian reasoning, which is that as one thing becomes less likely on your diagnostic list, something else becomes more likely, and vice versa. Okay, so that's Bayesian reasoning. So it's as important to say that, you know what, based on this test, I don't think that this is what's going on, because it makes everything else that's on your list more likely. And then we also learn about our own strengths and weaknesses in clinical reasoning by listening to others with more or less experience reason through cases. And this is why I put you guys in groups with your own people. Because what we're going to do, and I'll explain a little more in a second, is actually go around by where you are, and I'm going to hear your differential diagnosis that the MS3s came up, and we're going to compare it to what PGY3s are able to come up with, and how they think about it, and how their reasoning is different. And I hope higher level for the PGY3s. No pressure over there. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. Well, I said five groups because I thought we would have PGY2s, but it turns out we don't have any PGY2s on the boards right now. So we're going to be split up into four groups, and that's based on what we've done already. Each group is going to choose a spokesperson. And what's going to happen is I'm going to give you the case bit by bit, and each group, we're going to have 90 seconds to sit around as a group and come up with a list of things on your differential diagnosis. And then we'll go around to each group, starting with the lowest trained, going to the highest trained, and we're going to see what you thought of, and more important than just the list of what you thought of, why you thought that that could be a possibility, or as you go further into it, why something that was originally on your list is no longer a possibility. Ground rules. Once your group has spoken and you're done, that's it. You can't pipe in a little while later with, oh wait, we thought of something else. No, that's it. You speak once and that's it. If you ask me a question, whether medical, I'm going to say I don't know. You only get the information that's handed to you, and no cheating. So this is, like I said, it's not about what you know. So I don't want to see PDAs, iPhones, books, these really up-to-date books that are behind you guys, none of it. And just to remind you that eliminating from your differential is important as adding to it. And this is not the purpose, this is not getting the correct diagnosis. Remember, this is a case that went into the New England Journal of Medicine. This is not going to be bread and butter, obvious stuff. Okay, that's not the point. It's probably going to be a zebra that you'll never see in your life. The purpose is how you think through it. And if any of you happen to get it, great. Now, this is one time. Usually when I do this with my teams, I don't know the case either. I do know the case because I had to put it together. So I will try not to. When I go through my thinking, all I will give you is my thinking. I'll try not to give too much away. I don't want to lead you guys too much. Okay. You ready? See a bunch of interns. Good. The interns are naming some mental over here. So, okay. Do you have like a timer, like an iPhone or something that I can use? I can also use my watch. I'll use my watch. Alright, so we're going to start. So, 23-year-old South African man presented to the ED with a two-day history of fever, mild dyspnea, headache, nausea, and myalgias. Symptoms began 5 days after he traveled to Colorado to ski with some friends. He was thought to have a viral illness, was treated with IV fluids, and discharged with a prescription for Vicodin. After 2 days, his symptoms worsened and he returned to the ED. A chest x-ray was clear and he was treated with IV fluids again and ibuprofen. Again, he didn't feel any better. The following day, he returned to the ED with vomiting, dyspnea, and photophobia, and he was admitted to the hospital. All right, MS3s, you guys are sitting over here. Interns over here. And subs over there. Okay, so you guys now have 90 seconds to formulate a differential diagnosis. What you think could be going on with this person. Okay, go. I should begin with the intern to discuss it. Sub eyes over here. Time's up, no more talking. Silence is golden.
Maybe you should join us.
Okay. All right. So, starting with the MS3s, what do you guys think is going on? Just pick a spokesperson and tell me what you think. Okay, no more talking. That's it. It's 90 seconds. These are strict rules here.
Maybe a meningitis, a picture of meningitis or viral meningitis.
Okay.
And but could be a acute HIV.
You say but, this is important to give us the but. So why are you sort of questioning that?
I'm questioning myalgias and Lyme disease. I don't know, I think myalgias are more of a later on, more of a dysentery or myalgia or arthritis. That's why I was a good person, but a good sense, so that's why we've got a place.
Anything else?
Anything else?
Anything non-infectious?
Move on to the MS4s? You feel okay with that? All right, what did you guys come up with? Sure, the people who are, you should be the spokesperson. They've got full mouths.
Dryish.
Okay.
Pushing flu. Let me put that with the new progression of this. Pneumonia. Encephalitis. We have what, like 60 seconds to do this?
That's the only story. Malaria. Syphilis.
You can also give me reasoning behind it if you want.
Pneumonia and influenza are probably most likely, just given that they're the most common. Even though he has a clear chest x-ray, maybe he could be a little dry. And then, you know, if you gave him fluids and then you did a chest x-ray, maybe the pneumonia would blossom. Meningitis is always something that you want to think about with the photophobia and the neural symptoms. Malaria. Given that we don't have a more recent travel history, that's something that we can think about given the set of symptoms that he's presented with. Very awesome.
Since really, that's what I mean by the clinical reason. Thank you. That's good to tell me, not just the list, but why you think some things may be more or less likely. And knowing that we don't have very much information yet, we'll get more. Okay, interns, what did you guys come up with?
Number one would be meningitis, headache, photophobia, fever. Then encephalitis, people have the same symptoms, acute, headache, nausea, photophobia. Because of his travel history and fever and living dyspnea, we can think about infections like coccidio and histobabble, especially his travel to Colorado, the Midwest. Then you can also think about food poisoning really on the lower side, food fire poisoning, gastroenteritis, again because of vomiting and fever. You can also think about malaria because of fever and myalgias, and you can also think about dengue. Was that dengue?
Just gonna write that as CTF. You guys will know what it is. Okay. All right. Big guns over here. PGY3/2.
So we have meningitis, both bacterial and infective. We also had fungal infections, coccidioidomycosis, probably histoplasmosis. We had atypical pneumonias, or even bacterial, although less likely, there should have been an alveolar infiltrate. We had viral myocarditis because of the fever. We had primary HIV infection. Influenza, and then we thought of things like infectious mono and viral infections like toxo, etc., porridge type of infections.
So, really great list and really good things that you guys are thinking about. I'm not going to add very much. I'm just going to tell you how I approach this. So we have, he's a young man. We don't know about any previous medical history. We'll find out. We don't think there's any previous medical history. Yes, he's from South Africa, but until I get more information about his travel history, I'm not going to make any presumption. The only thing is we know he went to Colorado. So, and he has fever, headache, myalgias, and some photophobia. So the fever certainly is pointing to some kind of infection. Photophobia, I agree that meningitis is concerning, but if it was a bacterial meningitis over this many days, he'd probably be dead. So it's unlikely that I would consider, though, an aseptic meningitis for sure. Although remember one thing, and that's that ibuprofen can also cause an aseptic meningitis. So the photophobia could also just be now a result of the medicine he's been given. Who knows? And he also was on an airplane. So what happens to people on airplanes? We always have to think PE, and then what do people catch on planes? So I agree, influenza, parainfluenza, and atypical pneumonia would also be on my list right now. I also agree with admitting him to the hospital. And I'm going to make a list. Okay, so you ready for more? Okay, so this is where we get some of his background. So he has no known past medical history. He's not on any medications other than the Vicodin and the ibuprofen that he's been given. He has no known drug allergies. His family history is hypertension, and his father had African tick bite fever. He's not a smoker, doesn't use drugs, drinks socially, and he is sexually active. He was born and lived on the west coast of South Africa. He's traveled to Mozambique, the United Arab Emirates, and Canada, and Japan in the past year. Recently drove across the South Africa, across South Africa in an uncovered vehicle. And 90 seconds starts now.
This is in the past.
It's all past year. It's all past year. It's all past year.
Okay,
time's up. It's time. Silence. Okay, MS3s, what'd you come up with?
Down in South Africa, depends on Burundi or Zambia. I think they have has the fevers, it has all the fevers and myalgias, and it fluctuates. There's a went through a male, maybe a GC disseminated. No area and all other stuff that everyone else already said. Oh, you're saying if you've seen your test list, just maybe he went mad somewhere. And we were thinking.
How about the bonding? You could take this with just
not really been enough drinking, but I don't know if it causes my algas and all.
What is it?
Yeah, I know what we're saying. This is skiing. My algas might just be from too much skiing. The glass is running out to skiing process and skiing. My algas. Martin, do
you like swimming or do you walk barefoot? One of those things.
Everything
Parasite and OS. If I got Dr. Hoyle in here, she would destroy all of them. Okay, MS4s.
So we just want to add HIV to our list, especially now given that we're dealing with sexual partners, losing travel, people change a lot of their sexual practices with travel. I don't know how much, I mean, we thought about some parasites, but we don't remember that chart as well as you guys do. But so if we do more parasites, we'll be adding them. But I think some of our probabilities have gone up. Like, we're considering malaria more strongly now. I don't think actually we can head up for to add to our list right now. Stand by original.
We're happy with our list. I am going to put Parasite on OS for you guys. Because we're thinking of it.
Yeah, we are thinking of it. Just thinking for something.
What is
Parasite NOS. Okay. PGY1s.
Hello. I'm doing the social history of being sexually active with my partner, thinking about HIV and syphilis would be in our list. And then the tick-borne diseases like Rocky Mountain, Scottish fever, Rickettsial diseases, Colorado tick fever, and then typhus.
Anything that you guys want to take off the list yet?
Maybe food poisoning or gastric bleeding.
Maybe, just we'll give those a little of this. Why do you say that?
We don't have a history of if it was important, it would have been mentioned if he ate out or had some rough history there. And then he has profuse profuse vomiting and gastrointestinal diarrhea. We don't have that vomiting and nausea.
Yo, PGY3. What's this chatter over here?
Cheers.
So you guys are up.
Everybody said that yes, acute HIV could be given his sexual history. Again, we thought of syphilis, although we don't know if this would be in particular. We thought of arthropod-borne viral diseases also, including all the encephalitis, yellow fever, dengue, and then rickettsial diseases have already been covered, including Rocky Mountain spotted fever, then malaria.
Well, you guys really hit everything that I would have added to this one. I think the information you got now really only, it really kind of blows your differential wide open. It doesn't really narrow you so much because now you've got a guy who's extremely sexually active. And you guys said that when people travel, they often do funnier things, you know, sexually speaking. They become more experimental and less careful. So, and I think that that's an important thing to always keep in mind when you're thinking about a travel history, sexually transmitted diseases in addition to where they've been. And then the fact that this guy's been like everywhere and drove an uncovered vehicle, I agree with putting the rickettsial infections on there specifically. Malaria, absolutely. And everything else in acute HIV, of course, absolutely, you have to think about it. It's tough to really narrow us down yet. Hopefully our exam will help us narrow things down a little bit. All right. So physical exam. So he's ill appearing. Temperature is 38.8, which is a fever for those of you who don't know the Celsius system. blood pressure 96 over 50, heart rate 104, respiratory rate 16, sounding 95% of an air. He's got injected conjunctiva, he's non-icteric, he's got mild oropharyngeal erythema, no oral ulcers or lesions, no nuchal rigidity, his lungs are clear, his abdomen is benign, he's got no rash, and the remainder of the exam is pretty normal. 90 seconds starts now. Want me to remove it or put a downward arrow?
Downward arrow. One thing we want to add is in terms of Rexel, mostly we think of Katsel Brunetti, since he doesn't have any type of rash.
Any specific drug that you would say? Okay, we're going to move on then. Good.
I don't think we saw a whole lot on the Google that's going to change what we're thinking. I mean, we're still going to keep meningitis on because the nuchal rigidity is not that great for aseptic meningitis anyway. And, I don't think we saw that much that's going to change.
This doesn't really change the differential. It's more changes our management.
Except we can call it sepsis now.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you call it sepsis?
Well, we have oropharyngeal erythema. So maybe we can say that's a potential cause of an infection.
Can you call it sepsis?
We meet SIRS.
Okay, well, call it SIRS. You cannot call sepsis yet. No, you cannot call it. You do not have a source.
I need a suspected source. I don't need a definite source. I need a suspected source.
You cannot call it sepsis. Just trust me. You can't call it. Oropharyngeal erythema does not sepsis me. You've got SIRS, though. Systemic inflammatory response. Oh, we're talking about. Okay. You can't call this sepsis. But you're right. You guys are completely right to say there is SIRS here. You start thinking of it that way.
So other than that, I don't think we have much more to add. Okay. All
right. Ones.
So we're going to add a parvovirus or infectious meningitis because he's a young man,
with the oral erythema from Africa. So, and he's sexually active. So, young man sexually active with oral erythema. So we can think of infectious molecules or parvovirus. We still keep rickettsial disease and Rocky Mountain fever. We'll keep the meningitis low on the list, and until we get the LP, it's not going to be ruled out. We'll still keep encephalitis coxsackie.
How much is he does appear ill. He has fever. He has a little bit of hypotension, hypoxia, and tachycardia. We conjunctival injected. He has mild erythema, so we still feel this is viral. And we would keep the list that we have. It's probably not syphilis. There is no rash, and then again, all the other rickettsial diseases, including Rocky Mountain spotted fever, go down on our list because there's no rash seen. I hope they examine the genitalia also. it has to be done. Okay. the only thing that we add is possibly because he's hypoxic, he's got dyspnea, he's not really tachypneic as such, but he's tachycardic. And all the other things stay. HIV could still be there. It could be infectious mono. He doesn't have much spleen maybe as such, but has a little bit of erythema. The viruses stay, including the toxin, including herpes, all of those, given the conjunctiva are injected. Influenza stays there. Myocarditis could be. Aseptic meningitis, yes, I agree. It still could be because you don't really need to have typical meningitis signs.
Alright, so basically then I wouldn't be yelling at any of you guys in the morning if you didn't get the LP on this person. You're all telling me you get an LP on this
person.
Alright, so I agree with you guys that there's really not much to take off the differential at this point. The few things I would put meningitis lower down, but I would still get the LP. I would put the rickettsial infections also lower down on the list, but not much else changes, and I would really focus in. You guys all have, if you look at all of the lists here, there's only one thing that's not infectious on any list. What's that?
PE.
Is PE off the differential yet?
No.
So hypoxic, he's tachycardic, and he's for the fever also doesn't help because you can get a fever with PE. So I would still have that on the list. But in general, I'm really focusing more towards infectious causes of this because he's got SIRS. And his SIRS is based on his temperature and his heart rate. Those are his SIRS criteria right now. We don't have his labs yet. So I think we're going to get labs now, and I think the labs will help us start to hone in this differential. By the way, I want everybody to note that it is now 20 minutes after 1, and we still haven't had labs. Anytime I ever do a case with you guys, you'll see that labs come really, really late. Because look how much you've been able to think of. Now you know what to order. Okay, but they ordered for us. So these are your labs. White count 9100 with 50% polys, 42% bands. Hemoglobin of 16.7, platelets 123, creatinine elevated at 1.4, albumin 3.9, 354 and 197, alkaline 73, T-bilirubin 0.7, IR1, LP showed 1 white and 2 reds, normal glucose and protein, and the blood cultures were drawn. Okay. 90 seconds starts now.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Time's up. Alright. So remember, the one thing I'm going to tell, the advice I'm going to give you guys now, is that if you're stumped, try not to add too much to the differential. Try to take things away. Okay? Try to see how some of these labs can fit into what you already thought about. Because 85% of your diagnosis is coming from your history, not from the labs. Okay. Look at that. Classic rookie mistake.
Deficiency in genes given where drug volumes are traveling around.
Went lower or off?
So we're not experiencing this process. We're aware about the SDLT, and it's alcohol hepatitis, and AST is probably ALT. So we're not sure how to work into the differential groups.
All right, we're going to move on. Interest of time. MS4s.
Leukemia actually.
Everybody, shh, all be listening to each other. It's a part of the exercise. Listen to each other.
Leukemia actually crossed our mind as well. Just given that differential.
We have a lot of whispering. Guys, really, I'm serious. You guys should be listening to each other. That's a part of the exercise.
We meant to actually probably, I think in hindsight, put this on sooner, just given his travel history and stuff, but we thought of viral hepatitis, just because you can have a normal viral prodrome. I wish his ALT and AST were probably a little higher than that, but... We'll meningitis doesn't seem as likely anymore, but the ALP...
Can I cross it out?
She wants 2 arrows down. Very, very good. But, I mean, other than that, we didn't really cross anything out. Or back anything, so I was...
Insurance. We consider hepatitis panel, like hepatitis A, B, C. And the second on the list is like infectious mononucleosis. Young male fever, oral birth and asthma, with increased hepatic enzymes, decreased platelets, and acute HIV. That's the main thing. Meningitis goes down on our list, because the disease goes down on our list. And malaria dengue is still on the list.
I'd like for you guys to let me take out the eraser at some point. Okay.
So we'd be most within terms. It's
we agree that could be infectious mono. Acute HIV, because he seems to have a lot of lymphopenia, which happens in acute HIV. Sounds like the CD4 would be, at this differential, would be around 100, 150. So that's lymphopenia. And also has a little bit of thrombocytopenia and low-grade hepatitis. So acute HIV definitely could be. I agree with viral hepatitis A and B. I really doubt C, but definitely when we're going to check his hepatitis panels, we're going to do HCV antibody. I agree the meningitis is probably almost effectively ruled out, not 100% anytime, but it's probably already ruled. I mean, given the one white cell and two red cells, sounds unlikely. We agree there's probably not syphilis at this point in time, or the cancer diseases, we could cross those out. We agree we cannot cross out.
One, syphilis crossed out too?
Mm-hmm. It probably could be dengue, although it doesn't sound like there's just thrombocytopenia to advocate it, but there are no severe myalgias or break bones or petechiae seen on the skin, so it's a plus minus. And again, malaria. Very low. But yeah, it sounds like viral for now. Mono or any of the atypicals again, toxo, herpes, CMV, and of course. And it should be a problem.
All right, so at this point, like I said, I mean, I do think you do need to add to the differential here, but it would be nice to see if there's anything we already said would fit in. The most surprising, there are two really surprising findings to me. One is the level of bandemia, I think is pretty shocking. And the other one is his transaminitis. I wasn't expecting that. So these are the ones I'm really trying to think about. I think you can take meningitis off your list. At this point, it's, I would say, not meningitis. So I would erase, but I'll leave that up to you guys. It's your list. So the bandemia points more to a bacterial infection, but everything else seems to be screaming viral to me. The transaminitis, I agree with your typical viral hepatitis, but I doubt this is Hep B or Hep A. I also agree this is unlikely to be hepatitis C. I think you certainly have to start thinking of CMV, EBV. I agree with parvo and...
except anemia should probably be part of parvo, right?
Yes.
And that's why I wouldn't think she's Expedia either.
Are you talking about her? You're right. I bet she's right. That is, you know, G6PD is hard to put in here because there's no anemia and there's no hyperbilirubinemia either to suggest that there's hemolysis going on. And then I agree with HSV, VZV. These are like really, really, really rare causes of hepatitis. And are we going to put everything on just the transaminitis right now? I'm not so sure, because he could also have a congestive hepatopathy. Creatinine's also elevated. We can't ignore that. Probably he is just dry. But it's also something to think about, but I wouldn't put a differential on it just yet, other than being dehydrated. Okay. Okay, so this is what happens the next day. So he's given IV fluids, he's given some anti-doxycycline. His creatinine is decreased to 1.3. By the way, one thing nobody put on the list, including me just now, is acetaminophen toxicity. Remember, he was given Meglin. So we don't know if that's also been added to the issue here. AST, ALT continue to increase. Platelet count decreased, and white count decreased. Blood cultures were negative. Blood smear was negative for plasmodium. Utox was negative. Tylenol was undetectable. Hep C antibody, Hep B surface antigen, and core antibody, and Hep A antibody, all negative. CMV, HIV 1 and 2, leptospirosis, EBV, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, typhus, and Q fever, all negative. 90 seconds, go.
Yeah. So
color of it is basically reason why we have HIV.
HIV because it can still be acute HIV in the period, and it will still present and it can still be negative. We realize that it would still be negative at this point. And we now we're thinking recently of toxin exposure in the city. I'm not sure what toxins could be. We want to find out if you can expose to anything. It's the liver and what ends up going up and the brain function.
Our whole like differential is basically crossed out.
That's important because you may end up with the one thing that's right.
Maybe you need to rethink it. Viral hepatitis seems less likely. You know, they did a blood smear for plasmodium. We're assuming they would have seen if there was anything atypical or not for like a leukemia. Well, they looked at the blood smear. You know, acute HIV still stays on, but malaria is out now. Meningitis is out. Encephalitis is out. I mean, seems like this would be the worst flu ever. So, I mean, I, that's kind of where we're at now.
Did you have one?
What's going to keep HIV the living infection? And then would still like to keep dengue for increasing future counts and dengue disease? What cross out? Meningitis, hepatitis, and food poisoning, gastroenteritis, and malaria is also ruled out because of negative plasmodium. Yes, and Rocky Mountain spotted fever is also out.
Thank you. You guys do have typhus on your differential. Do you want that in or out?
Typhus.
It's hard to see all of yours. Okay.
So meningitis was already out. This takes off viral hepatitis off, which was a thing that's low on the list. Mono is out, which is surprising, but it's out. Doesn't have CMV, doesn't have walking open scarlet fever, obviously. Typhus, all the rickettsial diseases were already out. We would still consider acute HIV for already the reasons that they mentioned. We need a viral load or a treatment for antigen. Influenza is still in. The only thing they didn't test for was herpes and toxo, so otherwise all the atypical virals are out. Malaria is obviously out. Dengue probably not there. I mean, it's probably out also. Myocarditis is still a possibility, I guess. They might have transaminitis from iron. Being too hypotensive, shock liver. From an infection, probably.
Probably what?
No, probably not from an infection.
So, I mean, what have we got here now? We've got this guy who's...
The only thing that he would add would be some sort of ingestions.
So
like herbals or...
Ingestion.
Exotic remedies or something.
Yeah, I mean, so at this point, you've got a guy basically with hepatitis, and that's the part that's really getting worse, and having what looks like, we don't know what's happening to his hemoglobin and hematocrit, but white count and platelets are going down. My guess is if the hemoglobin and hematocrit were really going down, we would know it. They would have told us that. But there's something's up with his liver, right? And with the white count going down, it is pointing more towards something viral in the liver. And I would agree, I mean, I have to agree, these two areas really help you here. So it's not your typical viral hepatitis. It's not Hep A, it's not Hep B, it's not Hep C. But is it something else, some other viral infection of the liver? The other thing I would actually think you guys took off before, but which would be back on the list, is syphilis. It can also cause a transaminitis. Acute HIV, I agree, is still on there. But CMV, did we get CMV off of this yet?
Yeah, CMV just...
Yeah, there it is. Okay, yeah. CMV is off, EBV, mono, etc. Those are all off. BZV is still on the list for causing hepatitis. Yeah, I mean, and then the question becomes, what do you do with this poor guy? He's on doxycycline. I mean, is that enough? Because what is the doxy treating? So acutely, how do you manage him? Well, I probably brought in his antibiotics for a starter. Who would start antiviral medications right now? Would start acyclovir? Only because the only thing we have on our list right now for causing an acute hepatitis is viral of some other. If he was sort of stable otherwise, but just had a transaminitis, I'd say no. There's no reason to start something like acyclovir. But you've got a guy who has SIRS, is progressively getting worse. At that point, you throw everything at him. So I would put him on acyclovir. Oh, they did too. Okay, so they brought in his antibiotics. Transaminases really start going up. Bilirubin goes up and his INR is 2.4. His mental status declines and he has generalized tonic-clonic seizure. He's intubated and transferred to a tertiary care center. We're not going to do 90 seconds now just for the purpose of quickening this up. So what's going on with him?
1 minute.
What do we call it? Get out the differential and just look at these numbers right now, what's going on with him. What does he meet the criteria for? And I kind of put this towards this side of the room. Yes, this is fulminant hepatic failure. So that's why he's going to a liver transplant unit for a transplantation. So what causes fulminant hepatic failure? So this is where you have to start shifting away from some of the other things that you were thinking before. Not necessarily what you were thinking before, but what causes fulminant hepatic failure? So just to open it up, what does?
Mm-hmm. I think in this country, the leading causes are Tylenol poisoning.
It's the number one cause in the U.S., which is why they're now taking Vicodin, Percocet, and everything else off the market. Okay, so fulminant, hepatic failure. So Tylenol.
The viral hepatitis, which this guy doesn't have, but they are the leading.
What's one we haven't tested for yet, though? So say HEV. We've tested for you. We've got HAV and HBV. And these have been, these are all ruled out already. What else?
I think varicella is the leading cause of hepatitis, right?
And then if there's a pediatric patient with chicken pox, what else could you think of?
Ray
syndrome.
Ray's.
And aspirin, exactly. They got sick. They got aspirin.
And then I think acute alcoholic hepatitis is also leading cause of pulmonary hepatitis, which.
Anything else? Because like a little bit older in female, a little bit older, maybe like in his 30s or 40s, in a woman. Autoimmune hepatitis. Anything else? What are other common causes of liver disease? Wilson's disease? Something like that, that it's been undetected for so long and then it's just gone off.
Wilson's, wouldn't it be more subacute?
It should be. You're right. It should be. It shouldn't be fulminant. Like, it shouldn't be as acute.
But it could be acute because it could just be like plugging along, and then all of a sudden decompensating.
Exactly. So that's where it could present fulminant because he wasn't noted before that. So that would be sort of lower.
Or any other toxin ingestions. I don't know.
What's a common one? I don't know how common it is. Where I did my residency, we saw it a lot. It could be hallucinogenic.
Mushrooms.
So other toxin. In fact, there were signs on the freeways that would have about, like, sort of from one of the ERs who's trying to get business, about, like, did your kid just eat bad mushrooms? Like, bring them in. Okay, it's another virus that it's gone around here, but it's not on this list right now.
EBV?
Well, EBV can, so we'll rule that out here, but what else? Okay, another one. It's on the third year's list. Towards the bottom.
It's just very rare.
Very rare. It's just being in hospitals. Right. It's a pretty good list. And this is sort of right now where some of your thinking needs to go. Let's put it with this patient now. Is there anything that you think would be more or less likely in this patient at this moment? Hep E. Okay, I mean, I think we need to test for it. It's possible. My only issue with the alcohol hepatitis is at some point you have to believe the history you got. That we got an occasional binge drinking history, but he's kind of young for alcoholic hepatitis anyway. So I don't think so. It's not an impossibility, but I don't think so. Must be something we don't know about. Okay. Alright, let's see if we get any more information. I'm not sure if we get any. Okay. Alright, so I mean this is a real patient. So he started, he declined, so started on his renal function declined, so he started on continuous PNOV hemodialysis. He's got cerebral edema, his INR is going up, his platelets are going down, he has an upper GI bleed and hypotension, he has a chest x-ray that looks like ARDS, and he started on vasopressors. Does this change your thinking at this point? Not really. It's just worsening. Okay, so this is what comes back. So he has HSV type 2 from serum, PCR in serum. HSV from bronchial aspirin is also positive. IgG for HSV1 is positive. IgG for HSV2 is negative. IgM wasn't tested. He basically continues to do worse. He gets candida, he gets bacterium, and he ends up having withdrawn in convey care is it would also support the dies. So what's the diagnosis?
Acute hepatitis.
So acute hepatitis due to
HSV2.
Right, so as you can tell here, he had HSV1 already, IgG positive, IgG negative for HSV2, but HSV2 found in his urine. So it's acute HSV2. So that's what caused his hepatitis in his body. So you say, my gosh, could we have done something sooner? This like 23-year-old boy that saved. Well, so what happens is they get further history, they push the friends a little bit more, and the friends reveal that he left a nightclub with a woman who had a vesicular lesion on her mouth. So could we have diagnosed HSV2 causing acute viral hepatitis prior, and like, you know, 4 days earlier?
HSV2 doesn't cause labialis that commonly, right? It's more genitalis. Labialis is
typically one. Yes. But remember that, well, first of all, different sexual acts. It's all about the different sexual acts. And in what causes this disease where there's contact. I mean, you get like herpetic whitlow on your hands. So that's what's important. People get HSV1 on their genitalia. People get HSV2 on their mouths. So basically we've got a fulminant hepatic failure due to HSV2. So just briefly on fulminant hepatic failures, development of acute hepatitis and encephalopathy in 2 to 8 weeks after initial symptoms in a person with no history of liver disease. Causes most commonly, which you guys really came up with, were acetaminophen overdose, idiosyncratic drug reactions, acute hep B, ischemic liver injury, acute hemodialysis. And which you guys did think of at some point was a very good thought, because it was hypotensive. Hep A, autoimmune hepatitis, but as many as 27% of cases are ongoing. And now, fulminant hepatic failure, this is found in less than 1% of cases. This is not what I'm, this whole point of saying it's not, the diagnosis is not the point here, okay? Because this is not what you should be thinking of when you see a transaminitis right away. When you hear hep Bs, of course, it's not zebras unless you're actually in Africa. And so who do we see it in? Immunosuppressed people, pregnant women, children. So acyclovir does improve survival rate, and liver transplant is potential treatment, but it is not, you know, it's complicated by the fact that liver transplant needs to be on major immunosuppressive drugs, and there's concern about reactivation. So could you, you know, really the purpose is clinical problem solving, so could this diagnosis have been made earlier? No. It could not have been made earlier here. So this is the case where the patient, without that history of him having kissed a woman, possibly with an oral lesion, you could not have made, that this should not have come up under differential early on in the diagnostic process. It does highlight the importance of a really thorough sexual history, especially in a young person who was recently traveling for all the reasons that we discussed before, was a serious illness. And that is not just having sexual partners that we have, which is what they got. It's what was your last sexual contact, any sexual contact, and defining it out for people. So it's a really sad case because they could have made a life, they may have been able to save his life had they diagnosed it sooner, but you really can't say that there was any fault in not diagnosing this sooner because this is such a rare disease, and even the mild transaminitis, you really weren't thinking about it so much, and you shouldn't have been thinking about it that quickly. Okay, that's the case. Questions?
I wonder if they had said HSV-PCR and HSV-PCR, would that have...
Well, this is the other issue that's brought up in the actual article is that HSV-PCR in general takes way too long to come back. I don't think it would have been any faster in the CSF because even that takes a while. And had it come back sooner at some point, they may have started acyclovir sooner. But that's often why we start acyclovir. If you're concerned meningitis and somebody who has a risk for like a herpes encephalitis, you don't wait for anything. You just start acyclovir. Acyclovir is not without its issues, especially at Jacobi. So IV acyclovir, what's the biggest concern about it? Renal failure. And the reason why I say at Jacobi that's a problem is because that's a rate of infusion. So if it's infused slowly, you shouldn't have a problem with acyclovir, but all too often our nurses just a little too quickly. So it's not a benign decision to start somebody on acyclovir. But in some cases it's appropriate. It would not have been appropriate to start this person on acyclovir from the get-go.
Okay.
in hindsight, it's easy to say you shouldn't be starting on this, but you shouldn't.
Another question?
Same for the patients who are getting compromised.
They don't know, and I think the family declined autopsy, so they don't know. Is it possible that he had acute HIV? No. My guess is that was sent. I don't remember which hospital this came from. Usually, my guess is that was the journal. You guys stay here. We'll just meet here because I actually need this. Not you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank
you, guys. All right, you guys come up a little bit.